Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 79 for November 24, 2010. This is Michael Loff. A very interesting and a very important topic. I want you to meet Deanne Chapman, dog rescuer, saving literally thousands of dogs over the course of her life. Tonight we're going to learn about safety and diet and grooming and obedience and so much more. We're even going to talk about some things that some folks are going to feel uncomfortable about, but that you need to know about. Things like sexual abuse of dogs and overbreeding, tying up animals, underfeeding them, malnourishing them till they're just skin and bones. And if you think that one person cannot make a difference in terms of advocacy, think again, because Deanne Chapman is amazing, and I think you're going to find very interesting the things that she's going to share with us as we tell you all about dog safety and care. Deanne, welcome.
Well, thank you, Michael. I'm glad to be here. Anytime I can help educate people about dogs, I'm willing to do it.
Yes, you are very passionate, as folks are going to find out as they listen to this. When I first found out, I was researching, I wanted to do a tech chat or podcast covering this topic, and then I started looking locally, and I found you on Facebook, but I guess my first stereotype and assumption was, okay, you rescue animals, you drive around and find strays and find them a home, but there's so much more to it. And maybe you started out doing that, but today you use Facebook. Now, you just started using computers just over a year ago, right? And already you have almost 1,000 people following you, different rescue groups throughout the U.S.
I never used a computer till a year ago. Didn't even know how to turn one on. Taught myself and made lots of mistakes and had the computer man at my house, I don't know how many times, to fix stuff that I messed up.
So how does Facebook help you save the lives of dogs?
When I first went on Facebook, I mainly did it to catch up with old people that I went to school with. My neighbor says, oh, you ought to try it, that I'd love it. And I did. Started making new friends. Then all of a sudden, one page, one day, a dog popped up, a picture of a dog. And was reading her post and her comments, and she was a dog rescuer, and I thought, well, how neat. Then we must have a lot in common, and we started talking and back and forth, and before I even knew it, I'm getting close to 1,000 rescue groups that I'm in all over the United States. I can get a dog pulled out of a shelter in North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, two that I've actually pulled out and brought to my house, transported to Evansville. Thanks to Michael, he helped me on one. That's how I met him. Because we have what they call a chip-in that we put on Facebook, and it's for everybody to help. If all my friends put $1 in, it would go toward that dog. That helps, because you have a puller's fee. Then it goes to a foster till transportation's made to get to wherever it's going. And I also help people get them to their house. I've brought them to my house, sent them to Texas, I've sent them to Florida, just about any state, Washington, New York. I've pulled them out of shelters all over and gotten them to places. And that's because I became friends with so many people, and I had to learn in each shelter who was a puller at that shelter, where could I get it fostered or boarded until I could arrange transportation for someone to bring that dog to Evansville.
And of course, some veterinary costs for shots.
You can't leave any state. The dog has to leave with a certificate of good health, or it can't leave the state. And mine got caught up in a mess last time that I ordered transportation. They couldn't even go in there to get my dog because state had came in and things were not right in Georgia. And they shut every dog shelter down. No pets could be sent to anybody. So I had to wait a month for my little peekaboo named Aria.
Who came up with a name like that?
You did, Michael.
That's right, I did. Aria.
And you helped me board her, and I never, ever could forget that, because she's absolutely perfect. And to think that I got her an hour before she was going to be put down, it was amazing.
So how many dogs do you save on average per month?
That's hard to say. I couldn't give you an exact amount because I work with so many rescues and I don't know. To go and talk to 900 and something people, I can't do that every day. I would be on the computer. I would never sleep, which I'm on it all day long. We're called cross posters, and we go to each shelter, and we start sharing that dog. And everybody that works on that one dog, we will try to save one dog. You can only save one dog at a time, but you just keep sharing that picture over and over and over and tell the story of it. And some are so sad.
Yeah, we'll get to some of the horrific stories here shortly. But
getting them out of them shelters is the main thing, because some of the shelters are horrible. They only hold them a couple of days, and they put them down.
And they said Tuesday and Thursday are big days when they put down animals,
yes.
And maybe you get 24-hour notice, and you're really hustling up to the last minute trying to save as many as you can. And it's rewarding and yet stressful, because for everyone you save, you can only enjoy it for a few seconds before you have to move on and try to save another.
It's amazing how you get attached to the one dog that you've never even met, and you work so hard to try to save it. Find out, you go the next day, is the postings of how many, who got put to sleep at that shelter and who didn't, who made it out. I get really emotional about it because I've become attached to that one dog, knowing its history, and it had to go down. Well, you've heard me cry.
Yes, I have.
Because it is such a passion with me, and I take it very seriously. It's deep down in my heart that I save a dog. And when I can't, I feel like I failed it.
Why do we have so many unwanted dogs in the USA?
Because there's a lot of stupid people. Sorry to use the word stupid, but their knowledge of animals is zilch. They have none. We have them brought in, I'm going to have a baby, or it got too big. And I think, okay, it got too big. When you bought that little puppy, and it was a little bitty fuzzy ball of puppy hair and cuddly, and it grows up to be a St. Bernard. Did you not know that you got a St. Bernard? And they're not going to stay little forever, so okay, you have it a year. And I hate spring, because we get all the Christmas presents that they gave the little kids. Now they're all grown up, and they're not wanted no more, and they're brought to the shelters to be put to sleep.
Today with the internet, people can do research. They don't think that very basic question, how large is this animal ultimately going to be? When we know people, you have a baby, you know it's going to grow up.
They think that when you take a dog to a shelter, it's automatically going to get a home. That is so wrong. Shelter is not always a shelter for the dog. Some shelters only keep a dog 72 hours and it's put to sleep. And they can do that three ways. There's heart stick, gassing is still allowed, which we are trying to get that banned in every state. Because that is the most horrible way for a dog to die. It takes 20 minutes for them to die. You can hear them. They're stacked on top of each other in a bin and then turned on the gas. And what it does, it burns their insides. And you hear them cry and cry till all of a sudden it's quiet after 20 minutes. And you know they're all dead. Then there's a heart stick. And if you don't know what you're doing on a heart stick, and a lot of the people that work there, they don't. They just jab them in, and if they don't hit the right place, they're just hurting. The dog is suffering. So the best way to do it is euthanize. That's when they put the dog to sleep first, and then when it goes to sleep with a shot into the blood, then they give it another one until its heart stops. They feel no pain.
But it seems like a lot of this could be eliminated simply if people would have their pets spayed and neutered.
Of course, that is one of the most important things that every pet owner should do. Unless they plan to maybe breed one or two times, but you can't do it back to back, because a lot of people want a certain breed of a puppy. And if you do it right and you don't become an overbreeder and have several kinds of dogs and you're breeding them with sisters and brothers, then they don't come out right. They'll come out with deformities. That can be very devastating to the dog. But if you just have a couple of dogs that you want to breed, that's okay, but you got to make sure you are registered AKC, because they come out and they do checkups on you and they make sure that the dogs are properly cared for. Overbreeders, they don't. They're in cages. There's no bottoms. The little toenails grow out so long they curl underneath the wire of the cage. The cage on top of that one, when that one goes to the bathroom, it hits the one underneath it. And they live like that. They're never out of the cage except to have puppies to mate back in the cage. It's just awful.
Yeah, you've told me a story of a dog you rescued that its hair and skin were just totally mad. It was fecal matter.
I kept one of that dog, in fact. It was a real tiny little Pekingese. She had feces twined all around her body so tight, it was like a rug. We had to shave her down to nothing. And when that happens, their skin becomes raw. It irritates the skin. Their toenails get so long that they curl around and dig into the pads of their feet. This happens in overbreeders and puppy mills. This is why we're trying to stop the puppy mills. Missouri is the capital of puppy mills. I'm so happy they just passed a bill. Now a lot of puppy mills are going to be gone.
So what things should we keep in mind when choosing a pet? I guess the size, right? We talked about that. Think about how large this animal is going to grow. Also, where we live, a house or apartment, do we have a yard for them to run and play? One thing you said is it's almost good, if you can, to have two so that dog has someone
to play
with.
Yeah, so it can have a playmate. When you're picking a dog, there's several things you got to consider. What job do you have? And how much are you away from home? How much is that dog going to spend alone that it's not going to be able to get training? Because obedience to a dog is very important. And believe it or not, they like to know obedience. They look to you for what they're supposed to do. But it's something you have to work on every single day. And if you slip one day, it'll go back into a pattern of not doing what it's supposed to do. Then you got to put in place the cost of what dog you pick out. Some dogs, if you don't brush them quite often, there's a lot that goes along with grooming in your dog. The hair mats, you got to keep them groomed for them to have a healthy skin. How old are you? And do you have kids? And how old are your kids? Don't buy a puppy or a dog and you want your kid to be totally responsible for it, because it never happens. Like, if you're an older person and you want to get a dog, consider adopting an older dog, because they're usually in the shelters. Please, we beg people, adopt. Don't shop at pet stores. Don't buy your pet in a pet store, because it comes from a puppy mill. You got to go with your age factor. If you're a person that does a lot of exercising and you want to do a lot of running and walking, a sports dog is good for you like that. Don't get a little chihuahua. You would want a bigger dog to take on runs with you, but you wouldn't do that with a little, any of the breeds in the small dogs, the Yorkies, the Pekingese, the Shih Tzus, the Chihuahuas. They can't keep up with a runner that runs miles. But the big dogs, they love it. The Golden Retrievers, the Labs, the German Shepherds, your big breeds of dogs, they're a better dog for you if you're that active. You got to remember, if you get a puppy, you got to potty train. So you got to take all these things into the reasoning of what kind of pet to get for yourself.
Likewise, if you're in an apartment, you might want one of the smaller animals.
As long as you teach it to walk on a leash, don't ever take a dog out off a leash. If it can take off and be gone in a second. Don't ever leave a dog outside by itself. It can be stolen, and that's happening a lot right here in Evansville. Dogs are getting stolen out of people's yards because they're not watching them. And usually when they get stolen to sell to the labs or used as bait in pit bull fights. That is horrible, because we've got so many that come through like that that we try to save. It's scary. If you ever saw one that's been a bait dog, you want to cry your eyes out for it.
A lot of attention brought to that with Michael Vick, and he spent 544 days in prison for it.
He got a pat on the head almost. He should have gotten a year for every dog that he killed. They saved 43 of his dogs. They found 63 buried in his backyard, and that's not to say what he did with the others, because he was supposed to have several. The breeder dogs that he bred, he takes out all the girl women dogs' teeth out so they can't fight and protect themselves.
So it's a two-step process. First, you've got little dogs that are used as bait, and then you put the pit bulls into the arena, right? And then they fight over this little dog.
They make the pit bulls mean, and let me express that to a lot of people, too. Pit bulls have got a raw deal when it comes to being a pit bull. 99% of all pit bulls end up in shelters and are put to sleep because they are pit bulls. But I can tell you from experience, I have rescued pit bulls. Pit bulls are not born mean. They become mean in the hands that they end up in. That's why when you do, if you have a pit bull and you're getting rid of them, please screen those people to the max. You do everything you can. You ask to see their driver's license. And a lot of people, they'll say, why? You're giving away dogs free. No, I'm not just giving them away free. I'm trying to find good homes. And if you can't oblige to everything that I ask for, there's no reason you even see the dog. Because we even do police checks on a lot of people. And if you have any kind of bad background, you more than likely aren't going to get a pet from rescue groups mostly. Shelters don't screen as much as rescuers do. We screen pretty hard, and we don't do it. They don't get the dog that day. We go through all the people, and we figure out who's the best, and if none of them is really the best that we think, they don't go nowhere until we find the right home. And then if it does go to someone, we ask, please, if it does not work out, you can't stand it because it's not getting potty trained right, something's wrong, bring it back to us. We'd just rather you bring it back to us. We will refund your money.
So what brands of dog food should people use? You said there's some videos that show some very disturbing things about some of the dog foods out there.
You have no idea what goes into different dog foods. I use ProPak. It's a very expensive dog food. It sells for $40 on the shelf, but I get it at a discount because I'm a rescuer. I get it at the Humane Society's cost, which is $11. It's got natural stuff that helps its bones. A lot of vitamin food in it. Don't ever buy dog food that's made mostly corn because that's a filler. That's just to fill them up. It also causes terrible skin allergies in dogs. I will not use it. I use everything's natural. You want chicken or fish. Believe it or not, fish is good for dogs because the oil in the fish gives them a beautiful coat of hair. It gives them good skin. They don't get the skin conditions. But they have dog food out there that has got dead carcasses in it. Roadkill. I'm talking roadkill. It's picked up off the road. I watched a video yesterday on how they made the dog food. They even throw in maggots, cracked eggshells, and they blend it all up in this huge machine so good that it just all comes out into these little containers that makes little bitty designs of dog food, and they add the dye that makes, oh, well, that looks good because that's got green. You think all that, but that's just dye. That has nothing to do with the dog food. It's coloring it and making it look appetizing to the human that they think, oh, that'll be good for my dog. It's not. That's horrible. My ProPak is just brown, and it's got brown rice in it, oats, barley. It has the stuff that's good for their bones and the muscle, the natural stuff. You want natural, not dead carcasses. And that's where you've got to really watch what brands. And honestly, it's hard to tell because you've got to just really read if you give them dry food, what's on the bag. Or if you give them canned food, read what is it made of? What does it consist of? Because the two meats that's best is chicken and fish.
When dogs are sick and people give them boiled chicken.
Vets recommend boiled chicken for them. Cottage cheese, yogurt. Those are things that are good in human food for dogs. You don't want to give a dog all human food and not no dog food. Because dog food's made for a purpose. They make the dog food, it helps their teeth. Because the dog's teeth go bad just like us humans. They need dental work. Two of my dogs that I have right now rescued, I spent a fortune on their dental work. One I had to have 13 teeth pulled. Another one I had 18 teeth pulled, but they can still eat because the dog has 43 teeth in their mouth, 10 more than a human being.
So what do you say to people when they say, well, why aren't you raising this money for neglected children? I mean, it's just a dog.
I get in a lot of arguments on that because people say, you're a sick person. You mean you'd save a dog before you would save a hungry child? No, no, no. That's not true. If a hungry child passed my way, I definitely would help it. But everybody has a calling or a passion. I'm going to say a passion that means something to them. I'll just take, for example, if a person and a dog were walking across the highway and they both got ran over by a car, 10 to 1, everybody's going to run to see if that person is okay. Well, I'm going to be that one person because I know an ambulance is already called and on its way for the person. I'll be the one that runs to see if the dog needs to be took to the vet real quick. I'm the one that's going to throw a coat over it because if it's hurt, it will bite you. You throw a coat or something over it and pick it up and you get it to the vet. They don't have ambulances for dogs. That is my passion, to save dogs. And then there's people who are going to save people. It just happens that the passion in my life is saving dogs. But I would never not turn away a hungry child.
You said it in four words. That's not my calling.
No, it isn't. Because God has helped me so much in my dog work, truly helped me, that I believe this is what he has got me here for, because this is what I've been doing for 25 years, and I'm single, and I prefer to be single, because I don't think a man could live my lifestyle. They would want more of my attention, which most of my attention goes to dogs. And there's some men out there that are great. We've got single rescuers, married rescuers, and the husbands, they go along and they help. That is my calling. God has answered so many prayers on my dogs. I had a dog, got sick on the weekend. I took it into emergency vet. They hated to give me the bad news, but my dog had cancer in both lungs. They didn't test it. They x-rayed it and said both lungs were black. I got down on my knees and I prayed about it. And I said, God, whatever this little dog's got, put it in me. I can handle it. This little dog can't. But let me try to handle it. And I swear, I felt air go through my body. Now, someone would probably say, oh, you're crazy. But he did. When my vet opened Monday morning, as soon as they opened, I was there before the vet. I was in the parking lot because I thought I was going to lose my dog. They took him in, they x-rayed him. The dog, his lungs was clear could be. And I still have that dog, and that was 5 years ago. So that's why I believe God. This is what he wants me to do. He helps me so much. I lost a dog. I got a phone call one day. My dog ended up in Cordon, Kentucky. I'm not even familiar with it. Never drove that area. And that was the night Evansville had the 2-foot snow. My little dog is a Lhasa. He'll never make it. He won't be able to survive. So I got in my car, and believe it or not, I made it to that town by myself, drove on up and down streets, calling his name, went to the police station. I tried to get all the help because the person that had the dog, saw the dog and he had his tags, they called me, and they said, "Did you lose a dog?" I said, "Yes, I have. It was in Kentucky." And I said, "How in the world did it get in Kentucky?" And he said, "I don't know, but we had it. We were going to hold it for you, but he slipped out of his collar, and we can't find him now." So it was getting dark, and I was really getting scared because temperatures were dropping, and it was down to 17 by now. I pulled in a parking lot. It was just an empty parking lot across from a store. And I said a prayer again. I says, "I need you to help me. I'm not asking you, God, to just place him in my arms, but lead me to what direction my dog's in, because I know he'll die tonight. He won't survive a 2-foot snow." Pulled out of the driveway, you pulled out, and you had to go around a whole block. Then you come to a stop sign. At the stop sign, there was a white church. At the church, there was some steps. I started hollering, "Gizmo, Gizmo," and out underneath the church steps came Gizmo.
Wow, amazing.
And I never was so happy. I was crying tears of joy. And he come running when he heard me, and he jumped in my arms, and I put him in my car and made it back to Evansville. So that's why I believe this is a calling for me, because my passion runs so deep.
Animal shelters, I guess, post about 24 hours or so before the dog is going to be euthanized, and you see these postings, and many like you go and try to find a home. First try to find what a rescuer to go in and get the dog, and then try to find a place for it to stay, and then do the chip in, right, for the veterinary costs and maybe travel costs to get it to a person in another state.
Since I've been networking dogs, first thing you have to do is you got to find a puller. Puller is a person that is able to go in that has the license, 501(c) license, to go in and be able to pull that dog out of the shelter.
And they must be 501(c)(3), right? Not just anybody can walk in and do that.
No, nobody can just walk in and pull a dog. And it's really sad because right now we have a woman that's using fraud. She's using fake stuff, and she's going in and she's getting these dogs and selling them to labs because she was on Facebook. She has been found, and she's in jail. Praise the Lord on that one, because she was killing a lot of dogs. Once I get it pulled out, I have to find a foster, someone that can keep the dog at their house. And we have a lot of fosters. We beg for foster people, even right here in Evansville. We need fosters. And if you foster, that means you keep the dog until we can find it a home. It might be 2 weeks. Sometimes it might be a month. It could be a little bit longer, or it could even be less. We always say, please foster and save a life. Because if you help foster till we find a good home, you save that dog's life. You're a good person. I foster. I'm a bad foster because I've become really attached, and I kept a lot of my fosters. A lot. I haven't. I find good homes. And after we find the foster, if it's out of state, then we got to find transportation. And there's several kinds. There's pilots that fly dogs, but it costs. You're going to pay. Like you said, Michael, then we put a chip in for each dog that we rescue. And all people all over Facebook that can see our postings, if they chip in even a dollar, it adds up. Because we have to get that dog boarded, and that can run from $8 to $12 a night, depending on how long they're going to stay there. That adds up. We paid $200 for Aria, remember?
Yes.
You came in the nick of time when you found me on Facebook. You were my savior that night, because I was in tears. I thought, oh my gosh, I can't let this dog die, and I'll adopt her. So then the $200 went to her boarding, her vetting, and I didn't have her spayed there because she has an appointment here in Evansville at the clinic, which I can get it done for $60, which if she had done it out there, it would have cost me like another $250.
But most places mandate that before they can leave the state.
Yes. I mean, you have to have a certificate from the vet that attends rabies shots, Bordella, so it doesn't get kennel cough. So many dogs in shelters come down with kennel cough, and it's highly contagious to the other dogs. And sometimes you have to end up putting all the dogs down. Sometimes you can save them with antibiotics. When you foster one, you got to quarantine for 2 weeks while they're on the medication to get the kennel cough gone. One of my own dogs had kennel cough for me bringing one in, but I took her and got her took care of, and she's fine and dandy now. A little Spitfire, all 6 pounds of her.
There's different transportation networks.
They call it legs. That's people from state to state will drive a dog maybe a couple hours. I actually, when one of my dogs, I met the people in Louisville, Kentucky. They came as far as Louisville, so I drove to Louisville, Kentucky, and got my White Peak China and brought him back on to Evansville. Now, this last one, she was awesome. She was great. Cost me, I paid her $125. She went to the boarding place at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday. She was at my door at 4 a.m. Thursday morning.
That is little Aria.
That's our little Aria that we rescued.
That's right. People work together and teach and help each other to learn the process, because there is a bit of a learning curve. It's a lot of time. It takes a lot of patience, a lot of cross-posting. There's a lot that goes on to make that work.
And a lot of people on Facebook, they see these dogs and they want to adopt one. So they have to go through all the procedures. We help them. That's what we throw in the chip in and get it started for them, because a lot of people don't have all that money right the way the economy is right on hand. And it has to be paid right there through PayPal on Facebook. Or you can take it and pay straight to the vet if it's being vetted. There's different ways you can pay it, but it has to be paid up front, you know, before you get the dog. It didn't used to be that way, but a lot of rescuers got stuck with the bill, and it came out of their own pocket, and it was pretty hard. Now we kind of changed the rules, and you got to put some money up there and then let the chip-in pay. Honestly, the chip-in works good. There's some really wonderful people out there that are into helping save animals.
They have the financial means, so they do the chip.
Yes.
And then others provide the homes and the love and the time and the attention. To me, it's a very amazing network of people who give in different ways to all make it happen.
They say it takes a village to raise one child. It takes a village to save one dog.
So true. So what are some of the other potential diseases? You mentioned the kennel cough, but other problems that people can have when adopting from a local shelter?
If a dog comes in a shelter, if it had a very irresponsible owner and didn't give its puppy shots, which they're supposed to have in the first 3 months of their life to avoid any diseases, parvo, distemper, those are the two main killers of puppies. And parvo is one of the worst because it's so highly contagious. It spreads throughout the whole shelter. They got to have their shots. And if they haven't, and one comes in the shelter and you happen to get that dog, an example, my girlfriend adopted a golden retriever. She was to pick it up last Saturday. They called and told her it had gotten sick in the last week before she could get up there. It died. It had parvo. It was 8 months old. Because whoever owned it when it was a puppy didn't give it its puppy shots, and it got parvo in the shelter, and it died. She was really upset she didn't get to adopt Brandy, the golden retriever. So it's very important that you give a puppy its shots, and it's by law. You do not get a puppy until it's 8 weeks old. That is a law. A lot of breeders give them out at 6 weeks. That's wrong, because it takes the full 8 weeks of the mother's milk to put antibodies inside the little puppy. That helps fight off diseases.
So what are some tips for obedience to help your new dog adjust to their new home and environment?
When you first get a dog, if it's a puppy, the first thing you do is you've got to potty train it. To this day, I still keep my pee pads down in certain corners of the house. And if I'm gone, they go on the pee pad. When I come home, I use the kind you put in the washing machine. You can buy them in the packages in dog books, or you can buy the pee pads in the packages that you just wad in the trash. But I like the ones you put down. They're cloth, and they're like they use in the hospitals, put underneath patients, incontinent patients. And I like those because they hold up real good, and you've got them all the time. You don't have to keep buying pee pads. And you keep moving it slowly to where you want your dog to end up going out when it has to go to the bathroom, and you learn the word that you use for it to go to the bathroom. Let's potty, or let's go outside, or different people use it different ways.
And you said always use the same door.
I was getting ready to say, you take the pee pad and you move it slowly toward the door that that dog will be using. Don't confuse the dog and go out the front, out the back. Don't do that. Get what door you're going to use. And if you don't have a fenced-in yard, make sure it's on a leash. Do not take your dog out without being on a leash or have a fenced-in yard. That is a must, because your dog could run off, and if you don't stay with it, it could be stolen, like I said. That's a serious problem that people have. Dogs are getting stolen, and it's happening all over the United States, because I've been reading about it this week.
So what should we do to protect ourselves when encountering a potentially hostile dog? I know a lot of times we hear stories of children being bit by dogs, and sometimes that's because maybe they're approaching the dog too fast, or people are looking the dog directly in the eye or putting their hand in its face. But what can we do to avoid or minimize being injured when handling working
a dog? If you don't know the dog at all, you don't look a dog in the eye, you keep your hands down, you move slowly, you don't run. Whatever you do, don't run. Turn around and walk away slowly, but don't ever give that dog eye contact if you don't know it. And even if you do know the dog, if your friends come over and they have little children, don't let get down and get up in a dog's face, because a lot of little kids don't know how to pet a dog. And when they see an arm coming up at them or they get up in their face, a lot of dogs will snap. Not because they're a mean dog. It's they don't know what's coming at them. Why? They don't know if you're going to hit them or what. And you will get bit.
You said very educational for you was watching and learning from the Dog Whisperer.
Oh my goodness, yes. I praise that man. He is one. He's a man that God put on earth. He has taught me so much stuff. Everything I've watched on him and I've used his techniques, they work. I have several dogs and I have a very balanced pack. That means they all get along. If one dog is not balanced, it can get your whole pack out of whack. Very, very important thing to have a balanced pack. And there's certain ways that you use obedience without ever having to hit them. You don't ever have to hit and beat a dog. You're not making them learn. You're just going to make them mean or scared of you, and they'll cow down to everybody. You don't want that.
So how much money should we set aside to properly take care of a dog once we acquire one? And there's veterinary bills, there's diet.
Dogs can be very expensive because you don't ever know when one's going to get sick. They get the same diseases a human gets. They get the flu. They get cancer. They get thyroid problems. I had one die with thyroid problems. I had one die last Christmas. I had to have her put to sleep 2 weeks before Christmas. She had cancer. And she stayed alive for me because she knew she was ready to die. She would go off in the room and want to be by herself. And I was being selfish, and I kept her longer than I should have because I didn't want to let go. But one day I did realized it was time to let go. So I had the vet come to my house and put her to sleep in her little bed. And when she went, she was wagging her tail. She was ready. She was thanking me. But you should put back. This is where I put back $200 a month for my dog expenses. And if I don't need it, I just let it grow. I let it build up so I have a fund for just that.
What do you suggest for people owning more than one dog to help the animals get along? They say four or more becomes a pack. So you're saying the way that you handle the dogs and the way they work together is different if you have four or more versus three, two,
you got to train them all the same way. You can't train one different than the other or it's going to confuse. That's what caused having a balanced pack because they all got to know the same commands. I use my back door. I don't use my front door. But when I go out the back door because my car is parked out back, all I have to do is I put my hand up where they can see the palm of my hand. I say, back. I'm going to be gone a little bit. I'll be back. And then I'll say, back up, back up. And they stay right there while I close my door. None run out the door. And when I come in the door, they're so happy. Dogs don't have a time thing like people do. Like, I can go out to the trash and come back in, and they act like I've been gone for 3 hours. They're also glad to see me. I just went to take the trash out. Or I can be gone 4 hours and come back and get the same response that my dogs are so glad to see me come through the door. And then I have to back them up. Then, too, so I can get up the stairs and into the kitchen to get into my house. I just back up, back, 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 back. That's how I do it. And I do it at the gate when I go out of the fenced yard. So none of them run out the gate. They don't even try. They back up. When people come in, they back up. Each dog you have to train just the same. Each new dog has to come in and learn the same commands as all the other dogs.
So anytime you bring in a new dog, like you did with Aria, there's always the chance that the pack has to get used, and she has to get used to the rest of the pack.
Yeah, and we just really got lucky on her because she fit in like she'd been there forever. We just got lucky, Michael, when we adopted her.
But that's not always the case.
You're so right. The first thing you got to do is let them all smell. You put that dog down and let them all smell that dog. That's how they meet. That's a greeting. They got to smell each other. That's saying like, hello, glad to meet you. And after a few minutes, it might be scared and then it'll start slowly just working its way around the group of dogs. And before you know it, they're all running together.
Describe this morning ritual your dogs have.
My dogs get up at 6:30 to go to the bathroom. They'll stay there, but they tell me when they have it's time to go to the bathroom. I get up. They all form a circle. I still haven't figured out what they're talking about. They won't tell me. I don't understand them.
But you're not included in this.
Not at all. I might be standing in the other room, but they all form a circle, and they start barking. Every one of them are barking in a circle. It's like they're having coffee. They're in the floor in a circle having their powwow.
If what, like 5 minutes and today?
Yeah, that's about 5 minutes. It's like they're going to tell each other what's going to go on during the day, and then it just stops.
I want to hear this. I'm kind of intrigued, and if any listener can talk about this ritual and maybe what it means, it's kind of fascinating. I wonder if
it is
all packs do this, or this is just something that.
Now that I don't know. I just know mine do it at my house. When I brought in new, gathers and gets in with it. And I've never seen it on Caesar's show, so I don't know what mine are doing.
But you said you are the alpha dog.
I am. I'm alpha dog. They know that. I bite. I bite with my fingers. You just take your two fingers and you put on the back of their neck, just like a mother dog would do her puppy. And they know I mean business. They mind quite well.
So what's this cool tool you found for removing all the dead hair off the dogs? Furminator?
Or yeah, what was that thing called? It's a furminator. It's a little tool that has a blade on it, and you comb and brush your dogs, and it cuts off all the dead hair, digs the dead hair out. But I don't have to use it as often because I have my dogs groomed regularly. I keep my dogs cut pretty short because I have all Pekingese and Shih Tzus and one Lhasa, and they're all long-haired dogs. So that's what you call high-maintenance dogs, and it's expensive to groom each dog. Rate right now on grooming a dog is $37.
Per dog, and then how often do you do this?
Depending on how fast their hair grows out, probably every 4 months, maybe 5 months.
Are they like humans that grows faster in the warmer weather and slows down a little bit over the winter?
They shed their winter coat for the summer, and that's when they shed the worst. And then in the winter, their hair gets thicker. It becomes like a heavy coat to keep them warmer.
So what are the warning signs of potential problems like skin or bones or muscles or other diseases? What are you looking for that lets you know something's wrong with your animal?
Well, first thing you do when you get a dog is you take it for a vet. You need to have a regular vet. And you let the vet do that checking because it would be hard for you to diagnose if anything. Unless they walk funny or they're not walking right. You think maybe they're having a problem with the walk. It's just good that anytime you get a dog, you take it to the vet for a checkup at first. And he can pretty well pick up on everything through blood work and just checking the dog over. You can tell a lot by the teeth, his eyes. You can also tell the age by the teeth and the eyes.
Yeah, you said that about Aria, that she must be younger than you were first told, tartar.
Yeah, she has no tartar. Her teeth are spotless white. And she still has baby teeth. They said she was about 4. She's younger than 4 because she still has her baby teeth.
So what do you recommend to help protect your dog or dogs from being lost or stolen?
They microchip them.
And that's controversial with some folks.
I know that, but I don't believe it.
You don't believe some cancer can form around where that chip is?
Because I don't believe a vet would want to do it if he thought that himself. If a dog is going to get cancer, it's going to get cancer. It's just like a human. Person doesn't smoke, its whole life, why does it end up with lung cancer?
It could be secondhand smoke or other toxins from where they work or anything.
Oh, yeah, that could.
Our body creates and kills off hundreds of cancers every day. It's kind of amazing.
And they come up and say that different foods you eat, different this you eat causes cancer. They don't know. They're still working on cancer. And that's just like in a dog. We don't know why they get it, but they get it.
What about invisible fence?
I've never had one. I've always had a fence because my son had an invisible fence and his dog went right through it.
Yeah, they learned to tilt their head just the right way to minimize the shock and they
and
just charged it.
It never stayed in the invisible fence. It was always getting out. Myself, I wouldn't have one. Some people do. If I'm going to spend the money, I like privacy fence or a chain link fence.
So how do you make that tough decision when you must decide that a dog must be euthanized for just too many health related issues?
You can tell. When a dog knows it's dying, it'll start backing away from you and hiding. Like you go find him, it'll be behind a chair. Tyler, he ate poison grass. And now I've learned I don't have any grass where my dogs are at now. I have it's a rock garden and a patio. I keep it sprayed down in the summer so no weeds can grow up. Because when my Tyler ate oriental grass, it was highly toxic to him and he died on the operating table when they opened him up and they found that oriental grass in his stomach still. You know when it's time. They let you know. They just start withdrawing themselves from you, going off to rooms by themselves. Not want to be bothered, hiding under the bed. Tasha would always go in the computer room and hide in that corner. Plus, I watched that one tumor grow in between her little paws, and it was the size of an egg. And it got to bothering her so bad, she'd chew till it just bled. I knew it was time, so you know.
That's got to be pretty heart-wrenching. It's like a member of the family, and...
Oh, it is.
You're selfish for a little bit and want to hold on, or you pray and think maybe you're doing the wrong thing, but then you realize that...
You're either a true dog lover all the way, or you're not at all. There's not an in-between there. There's not an in-between. You're either a true dog lover, or you're not. You're just not an animal lover. There's no in-betweens.
Dan, you provided quite a wealth of information here, and I wish folks you could hear some of the phone conversations where we've had where I pushed a button and got her on a tirade about something.
Like Michael says, I say what I think, and I will step up, and I am the voice. Dogs can't speak, and I am their voice. And believe me, people hear it. I am their voice for them.
Difficult subject, Deanne, but something that folks need to be mindful of. But I want you to talk about some of the severe abuses that you've seen.
I have seen them pour gasoline just this week on dogs and set them afire and burn all their hair and their eyes and watching them, the vets try to save them and some can be saved. And this one man sexually abused this little dog. The woman had three dogs, and he'd go in her apartment while she went to work and have sex with her little female dogs. And the one was so little, he killed it by having sex with it. When you see that, those persons do not need to be on the streets, because if they do that to dogs, think what they would do to humans. They are sick people.
And of course, we talked about dog fighting.
When you have a puppy, don't play rough with that puppy to try to make it mean, because the older it gets and the rougher you play, the rougher the puppy's going to be. You want to keep your puppy at a medium play. These people that use pit bulls, they need off the street too. I wish all of them, because I've seen some severely bad cases of dogs that have been in fights and the scars that's left with them, but they can be brought back to be living with a family. That's why I say don't brand pit bulls, because they're not all bad.
And then there's people within the humane societies, or we'll just say animal shelters, who I have to believe almost get some sick, perverted pleasure out of killing animals, like you mentioned.
I call them to hear them cry. Thirsty for blood is what I call them. I got on there this morning, and the first thing I saw was Miami-Dade is the name of the shelter. They euthanized 128 dogs yesterday for no reason, because us rescuers, we were there to try to pull them out, and they wouldn't give them to us.
So it's not like they had parvo or anything?
They just wouldn't mess with us, didn't want to deal with us, so they killed 128 dogs yesterday.
And you've also recently had an incident where Facebook asked you to quit posting about a particular dog.
It was a dog that a guy tied it on the back of a truck and drug it all across town. It was beat up severely bad, but it lived. We named it Faru, the dog's name, and Facebook now put it that he doesn't want us to post any more postings on that dog. None of us understand, because it ended with a happy ending. It's in a foster home, and it's being treated great, and it's healing. So why they'll let us show these horrible abusive videos of women with high heels that step on little baby kittens until their eyeballs are out? We can show those. Those are called crash videos. We're trying to ban them, that we don't want them on there. These are people in other countries that's putting them on Facebook, because the other countries are bad about abusing their animals. One thing I do want to express out there, when you do get a dog, don't put that dog in the farthest back part of your backyard on a chain. For one thing, chains are becoming outlawed, and it's a $500 fine to have a dog on a chain now. In our city here, in Evansville, if a dog's on a chain, you are automatically fined $500. And they're working harder to get people that abuse animals. They just go off and leave them stranded in a house. I've got one at my home right now. He's too old to adopt out, so his sanctuary is my home. They just went off, left the dog in the house.
Yeah, we heard of them being tied to radiators. You said you actually rescued one from a yard that was tied up during a snowstorm.
Tied to a tree. I left him a note, though, and told him I had the dog. I took the dog. They don't know who I was. And the dog was fine. I got it adopted out to a wonderful family. Then people don't deserve dogs. When you get a dog, it becomes your responsibility, just like if you had a baby. That is your responsibility till it dies. And that means medical, feeding. These people that move off. Yes, we had two dogs that was tied to a radiator. When they were found, they had no water, no food for so long. They were so sad looking. Their muscle was all gone. They had no muscle. It was skin over bone. This is happening every day. Every single day, this happens around the world. It is not easy to be a rescuer and see the things that we see.
Yeah, emotions run pretty high.
Mine especially. You've heard me cry.
I've heard you cry, seen you get angry, seen you pray.
Yeah, and I pray. I pray every day on Facebook. I pray for God to send somebody to help that dog.
Well, folks, I hope this her story and information has been helpful to you, not only to take better care of your pets, but to keep in mind some of the horrific abuses and to step in when you see things are not right. Or if you just want to advocate for something you believe in, maybe you have no understanding for her love for dogs, but something you're passionate about that one person can make a great difference. And tools like social networking have opened up a wealth of opportunities to make changes in this world in which we live.
Facebook's been the best thing ever happened to me. When I got on it and I started being able to connect with all the rescues and make such good friends. I mean, we become a big family. We are a big family trying to save one dog. I'm getting close to 1,000 friends that's rescuers, and I hope to get it up to 3,000 like some of the others are. But like I said, I've only been on it a year, and I've made that many already. And I get every day, like 8 people this morning when I got on have asked me to join in, and I joined in.
Well, hopefully you'll get a few from this podcast. And so again, folks, maybe if you're complaining and concerned that your computer skills aren't what you want them to be, maybe you just haven't found your passion. Because Deanne certainly had to learn the hard way. But she had a common goal and a purpose and something that she wanted to accomplish with that computer.
Yes, and it's made my passion just that much more stronger because I'm on it from the time I get up in the morning till wee hours of the night. And you know that, Michael.
And I don't know how you keep yourself from getting overwhelmed. I'm always saying, Deanne, you're going to have to just take some personal
time. I
do.
There's
some
days.
Go out to a movie or watch TV or do something that's.
I'll say, I got to take a break. I'll even tell people, I got to go breathe. On the days that I've seen so much abuse to the animals, and it never ceases. When I just turn on and I see they're sticking those huge hooks through the dog's noses and throwing them out to the sharks for shark bait, it never ceases me. Every day I see a different kind of abuse, and I'm thinking, does it ever end? When's it gonna ever stop? But it don't. I learn something new every day, and I guess I'm glad that I do, because I want to educate people to what goes on in the real world when it comes to dogs. It's not just a dog. It breathes, it has a heart, it has feelings, it gets hungry, it gets cold. It's just like a human. It needs to be treated and respected.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.